Here's the whistle. Go, go, go. Second half, my three subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
We're talking indoor soccer.
This is a change of pace, Tim.
I'm excited about this. A lot of people that grew up near the Center Circle Studio, very aware of following the major indoor soccer league,
right,
and know of the Memphis Americans, but they really know about the Baltimore Blast because of Stan Stamenkovich and Tony Carbagnani, who'd played with the Blast.
Right.
And we have a former leader of the Baltimore Blast who's joining us today, and we're going to talk about the past, but we're going to talk about the present and the future today. Joining us on the podcast is the president of the Harrisburg Heat of the Major Arena Soccer League. We say hello to our friend Kevin Healy. Kevin,
hey, Kevin.
Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm happy to be here. I'm doing great.
Well, I got to ask you right out of the box here with Major Arena Soccer League. You're pretty much right in the thick of the season, right? This is a fall into winter slash spring. Where do you guys stand on the schedule with the safer at home and the sports shutdown?
Yeah, where we were at is we were close to finishing up the regular season. In fact, we had a game, most of our games were on a weekend, but we actually had a game on a Wednesday night on March the 11th where we beat Utica to put us in a good spot to be able to reach the playoffs for the year. We hadn't clinched it at that point, but we had another week and a half to go in the regular season for the league, and that's when everything started happening, and come March 12th, the season was shut down, so the regular season was ended with not sure what they were going to do with the playoffs. Right. And that's kind of where we still are. We're watching what's going on with this pandemic, with the coronavirus, and trying to determine whether the playoffs can be held. If we did, it would probably be at one location with all the teams coming into one location with no fans, things like that. But no decision has been made yet.
We hear Harrisburg would be a great place to have that. What do you think?
Yeah, it'd be an awesome place to have it. But I
love it. I have family right over there, so it's a quick drive.
That's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. I mean, this is unprecedented times for all sports, and we want to talk a ton about indoor soccer. We love it. We don't think that it gets enough love,
right,
and press, and maybe we can talk about how FIFA treats it as well coming up. But really, we want to just rewind the clock back and introduce people to you, Kevin. Can you tell us about where your soccer roots began and where you first fell in love with the game?
Yeah, I'm a Baltimore guy through and through, and this is my first time that I've kind of, you know, I'm still living in the Baltimore area, actually, but, you know, made the trek up to Harrisburg. But, you know, I came through the programs in the Baltimore area. My dad was my dad's in the Maryland State Hall of Fame here in Maryland. He was a player, and he was a coach, and he was an administrator. In fact, he was in charge of Region 1 at one time on the amateur side. So, you know, I got introduced to soccer at an early age. And luckily grew up in a neighborhood, Dundalk, Maryland, that was very into soccer. And I played that along with other sports also. So, you know, I grew to love the game. I went to Cavern Hall, which was a powerhouse in soccer, along with some other schools at that time, Patterson and Archbishop Curley and the like. And then from there, went to Loyola College. It's now Loyola University, but Loyola College in Maryland, and had a four-year career at that point in time. And then where I made my mark after that was in coaching. I was very fortunate to coach a very good youth teams and very good amateur teams where we won a lot of championships, and I had a lot of very good players play for me. And then that led my opportunity in first professional outdoor soccer and then indoor soccer.
Brody and I just looked at each other as you were giving your biography, and our eyebrows raised and alarm bells went off for a couple of things. And we want to touch on the second thing in just a moment, which may be the bigger thing. But first of all, I want to ask you about playing high school soccer. Here in the Southeast, back in the day, it was kind of an outlaw sport. Can you talk about the culture of being a soccer player, a soccer star in high school in Baltimore? What was that like? Was it more mainstream than maybe what it would be here in the South?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call myself a star for sure, but playing it was definitely mainstream in this area in what you were doing. I mean, obviously football and was going on at the same time, and Calvert Hall has a big tradition in football with a huge Thanksgiving game against another local school, Loyola, that's going on for years and years. But in certain... soccer was already big in Maryland, and particularly in certain pockets. I had mentioned Dunno where I was growing up, and then in East Baltimore, the Hallentown area. It was huge in that area, where a lot of professional soccer players came out of there. And then in the Herring Run Park area, it was big. And then in the Towson area, Woodlawn area. So soccer was already thought of as a big time sport in our area. We had, I graduated in 1974, so in the late 60s, we had the Baltimore Bays in the area where we were playing international games. Pelé came to our city to play for Santos. So we had some big events going on, and Jerry Hofberger, who was actually the owner of the Baltimore Orioles, was the original owner of the Baltimore Bays at that time. So it was much more mainstream than it was in Tennessee at that point in time.
Yeah, there's a lot of money right there. But that being said, where our bread and butter is here in the South is primarily clubs. We have a lot more club teams, and it's kind of a them versus us when it comes to high school players. That's the mentality as well with the clubs to high school. Is it the same kind of mentality up there too? I mean, because it sounds like the high school is where it's at up there.
Well, no, club is also very big up here too, and it wasn't for a while, and then you had the academy come involved, but club soccer is very big here too. I mean, I was involved was the Baltimore Bays, still the president of the Baltimore Bays, and we won 7 national championships. We won the first academy under 18 national championship, but it always worked together in that high school soccer was the fall, and when you were of high school age, you really, let the high school take care of soccer at that point in time. But as soon as it was over, boom, club soccer was ready to go again. And for the best clubs, all the best players from all the different high schools were coming together at that point in time.
All-star.
And so high school had its place, and club had its place also,
right,
in what they're doing in both the boys and the girls' side. Now, it did create a little friction fairly recently when Academy came out and said, we don't want them playing high school soccer.
There it is.
There's the rub. Yeah, and then Academy, and that was just for the Academy teams and what we're doing. And quite frankly, a lot of the coaches that we have were also high school coaches at that point in time, some of the successful coaches. So that really, there was a problem involved with that. Now, I will tell you that I refused to vote yes to that. And according to U.S. Soccer at the time, they were going down, they were trying to get a unanimous vote for it. And I was like, I'm not going to vote yes for it because I think you're missing your mark in what you're doing. I understand what you're saying, the training and training multiple times a day and the beauty of Academy Soccer and having all the scouts watching and improving the game. But I thought in my own heart, in our club, our leadership thought that, all businesses start with raw materials.
Right.
And if you take some players and say, okay, I'm not going to play Academy Soccer now because I can't play high school sports. So a lot of parents through that era we just talked about, they might not even been soccer players. It might have been basketball players, football players, but their joy was in high school. And if people say, okay, forget soccer, we're not going to do that, or we're not going to do it on a really serious basis. I want you playing high school sports. I want you,
you start alienating
in what you're doing.
Right.
And you start alienated at that point in time. And some people, some top athletes not going into soccer, you're not going to make that up with training and what you're doing. So I thought they missed their mark a little bit, and we voted no, and according to what we've been told, we're the only one at that point in time, and it made it go to a vote within the within the board of the federation. But fast forward, the academy just ended with I guess a tough economy one now. And of course, MLS is picking up on it right now.
Yes.
And what's going on. But I think, at least in the Maryland area, a decent amount of players were still playing high school and then coming to play academy after it was over. And it created some friction there in what we're doing. So my biggest problem is soccer's always – against each other, whether it's indoor or outdoor, it's high school or club. All soccer needs to work together. When we work together, we're going to be a much better nation.
Can't we all just get along?
In international soccer. Absolutely. Can't we all just get along?
It's like a family reunion. It's like a family reunion, Kevin. It's like everybody's great, but then you get everybody together at the park and everybody starts snipping at each other. Next thing you know, fisticuffs are flying and people are wanting to sanction each other. It's crazy. But to your point about club and high school, we've had previous guests on. Some MLS All-Stars have been on here. Richard Mulrooney. We've had Ross Pauley. We've had Kerry Talley on as well. And to a man, they said they loved playing for their high school because they got to play with their friends.
Yeah,
and they also had the opportunity to make mistakes and develop creativity.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, you're playing with some different people. And some people are given some leadership roles because maybe, you know, in club, some of the better players all congregate together in what we're doing. And not always the case in high school ball. And quite frankly, at least in the Maryland area, some of the top high school games draw a lot of people to the game.
Yeah.
And what we're doing, and it creates tremendous excitement, creates tremendous memories, and also an opportunity to play in front of a lot of people and see, you know, how well you can perform for that. Because, you know, quite often I'm talking with, you know, you know, being on the coach side of it, you have a lot of coaches that might say, don't listen to your parents or don't listen to people sideline. You have to listen to me. And I'm always saying you have to take everything in and make the decision that you think is the right decision.
Right.
Obviously, I'm telling you what I think should be done at that point in time. Because if you really make it and you make it into college and then you make it into professional, you're going to have a lot of people yelling at you
right.
and a lot of people telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And
you got to learn to filter all that
against you, and you got to learn to be able to filter it. Yeah. So it's not being quiet. So high school soccer in our area does draw some games really draw some big crowds.
You know, you also mentioned about, you know, playing together. You know, some guys on the clubs might actually play for different high schools. Well, that's going to strengthen your club, too, because you know how, you know, your left winger, if you're a defender and you're playing, mm-hmm. he's on your club team, you now know what his tendencies are going against him. It's better than a scrimmage because you play a little harder, you play a little faster, you know, a little bit more gusto.
A little pride.
Yeah, a little pride on the line. So, you know, when you get back into that club situation, you guys now are on the same team, or you girls are now on the same team. You now have a better idea of this is what they're going to do and this is how I'm going to serve that ball up to them. Bam, you've got a goal. And it's glorious. And you're sitting there on you know, proud papa in the stands going, ha, see, this is what happens. So
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that is an absolute great point. And people have, you know, pride with their club, and then they get together high school and they want to, you know, they want to have the bragging rights when they come out.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Can you know, here's what they tend to do. And can we stop that at that point in time? And, you know, back when high school, but in college, now the colleges have the rules too, where you can't, they limit how much you can play, you know, play during Christmas season, spring break and things like that. Hey, when I was in college, you played as soon as you lost, basically, and you were out of it. You know, some people waited a week. I mean, typically, I played the next day. Most games were on Sunday there. You know, I got started right away. I signed that night and got started right away.
Yeah.
And once again, you had great friends in college but you had your club fraction, too, was going on there. And I thought, you know, it was a great spirit of the game that it brought out.
Joining us on the podcast today is the president of the Harrisburg Heat, Kevin Healy. He spent a lifetime in soccer playing and coaching at various levels. And I want to go back to something you said in your original introduction of yourself and playing at Loyola there in Maryland. And you won a national championship with a guy that we had on a couple of weeks ago by the name of John Huska. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Very, very good friend of mine. John and I go way back. In fact, we went to high school together and college together. He also went to Calvert Hall. So we went to school 8 years together and been friends every day since.
Now, I know he came to Memphis and he played goalkeeper. Once you left college, what route did you take that eventually got you into coaching soccer? Did you go into coaching right away, or did you get your toe into pros?
No, I didn't. You know, I didn't personally. I didn't think I was good enough at that point in time. I did have You know, some people talked to me, an agent talked about getting our name out only because our team was so good and what was going. But I was already doing some coaching at that point in time. I was still playing soccer, you know, high level at the amateur level. But I was already, while I was in college, I was already coaching. In fact, I was coaching some of our, you know, like the freshmen, and I'm being upperclassmen, junior, senior, and they were playing under 19 soccer. I was already coaching under 19 soccer at that point in time. So I was coaching some of my teammates at that point in time that were younger than me that was going on. So my route was, you know, I was still playing, but my route was through coaching, and I got very fortunate being able to be successful in that way.
How was it coaching for you, people that were slightly younger than you? Was it difficult getting respect at that point? What was the learning curve for you, and at what point did you feel like you had, you know, a commanding presence? Not a dominating presence, but enough where you walked out there and you knew that the bulk of the people were going to be listening to what you had to offer.
An emphasis on slightly.
Yeah. I was very fortunate, once again, where my dad was a good name in town and what we're doing. So at that point in time, while I had that going on at that point, I was more the assistant coach that was going on there. So I still got to, you know, do the role of the assistant coach, and kind of the same role as you think sometimes the upperclassman, which is given to, you know, the underclassmen sometimes some tips about what was going on, and quite frankly, some, you know, outstanding players. But I was involved, you know, somewhat involved in those teams at that point in time. And then, you know, I evolved out of that into the head coach soon after I was out of college.
Kevin, how in the world did you get involved in indoor soccer? It's a different game. We love it here. But how does one move into that particular sport? Did you do that through the club, or did the professional ranks come looking for you? How does that happen?
Yeah, I was somewhat fortunate there. I mean, indoor soccer was always a big player here in the Baltimore area. We had some when the Baltimore Blast came into town in 1980. So it'll be 40-year anniversary. They'll be celebrating this year of continuous indoor soccer. When they came to town from Houston, actually. Indoor soccer was kind of born in this area. We were already playing forms of it. Everybody played court ball, you know, played outside and played small-sided soccer. But some indoor facilities were being formed at that point in time. So we just mentioned high school players, college players being able to play as soon as your season was over. Well, your season's over in Maryland in November, and in November is somewhat cold here, and we had some outdoor leagues that were going on at that point in time.
Right.
Also, but indoor soccer was a way to come in, get your team together, organize, and you had all the best players playing in the same leagues. I mean, that's why I look a little bit today at sometimes I look at the indoor leagues, but yeah, some good teams here in this league, good teams over in this league. Well, back then, all the good players wanted to play against each other at that point in time. So all the good players were getting together. So that was kind of almost the first thing that you were doing there. And I, you know, I found some success. You know, I watched the games. I went to the Baltimore Blast game. I was at the first press conference they had, once again, due to my dad and the prominence he had in the area. I was at their first press conference, so I was, you know, I followed their game and had some success in the indoor as well as the outdoor. And in fact, I won, you know, I didn't win, but the players won. But I was a coach of several teams that won national indoor championships back when Francisco Marcos was putting together these indoor tournaments that led to the USL, led to the United Soccer League, led to initial USISL. But the way he gathered a lot of the names across the country with these indoor tournaments he was running at the men's level that were just phenomenal, that had all kind of up-and-coming pro players playing in it and former pro players playing in it. And, you know, Guy Newman was coaching the San Diego Soccer reserve team, you know, at the time. And, you know, Eric Geyer was involved in the coach. It's just, you know, all kind of names at that point in time. Then he ran, you know, under 19 tournaments too at that point in time, and formed some teams out of Baltimore that won some national championships, you know. And then out of that, actually, Francisco, at one point in time when he was putting together the USISL, United States Interregional Soccer League, he asked me to work for him. But it was, you know, I was fairly fortunate in the job I was at in banking at that point in time. And doing the coaching too, that I couldn't do that with my family involved. But I did get involved with the Baltimore Bays professional outdoor team starting 1993 when he started the USISL and got it up to our area, our region, with Richmond and Connecticut Wolves, New York teams and the like at that point in time. And then he went back to his roots a little bit and formed the I-League, that he was calling it, in the USL. And I coached the Baltimore Bays at the Outdoor League and the Indoor League. In the Indoor League, we won the championship three times. I had, once again, a lot of really good players, local players at the time, and up-and-coming pro players and former pro players, Billy Ronson, Mark Metrick, people like that playing for him, and young players like Dennis and Cabral, who became the all-time leading scorer for the Blast once I got involved.
And that's saying something. Because of the history of the club, right?
Absolutely. And so then in 1998, it all came together. It just, you know, the irony of it also, I was still doing the professional outdoor soccer, but we were doing it, practicing in the evenings, playing on the weekends. So I still had a full-time job. Quite a number of the players had a full-time job, or they were playing professional indoor soccer and doing the outdoors soccer also. But at that time, you know, Brian McBride was in the league, Tony Mayall was in the league. I mean, all the big names were in the league, you know, it was prior to the MLS starting up at that point. But I was pretty fortunate. So banking took me over to what was the First Mariner Bank, where Ed Hale owned the team. And Ed Hale was a former owner of the Baltimore Blast. And in an interview, he said to me, and I went there as controller of the bank. And in an interview, he said, "How involved are you in soccer?" I think he knew I was involved. And I said, "Very involved, because, you know, if you walked in my office, I was doing something soccer-wise. I wanted to make sure I said it in the interview." Very involved. And he said, "Well, maybe one day we'll get back more involved." And, you know, fast forward a year, he went and, you know, we explored buying what was then the Baltimore Spirit. They had changed the name to the Spirit and took it back to the name of the Blast. And he took it back over, and I became the coach and general manager at that point in time. And that became my full-time job. So I was pretty fortunate. I was, you know, and what I was doing, I went through the grassroots thing. I was successful in youth soccer and always stayed involved in youth soccer, but successful there, had some success in professional outdoor soccer, made to the quarterfinals of the nation the last year, a lot of success in indoor, and right place, right time, basically.
You know, despite FIFA treating indoor soccer as the redheaded stepchild, indoor soccer continues to live on. Yeah. Leagues continue to pop up. The Major Arena Soccer League is looking good. They've got, I think, was it 17 teams right now?
Yes.
In the league?
Yes.
17 teams. But really, I've done a little bit of reading, and it's hard to find that FIFA has much of a curriculum on coaching or development for indoor soccer. How did you grow as a coach?
Well, you know, it's trial and error. It's watching the game and it's analyzing the game and seeing what you can do at various levels and what's happening, you know, and talking to people that have come out of the game. And, you know, every time you go to a game, I mean, whatever I do, you know, you want to watch. You know, that's what I tell young coaches that are coming up now. You go to an outdoor game, get there early, watch the warm-up, watch what they do. You can always pick up something no matter what age you are and what you're doing. So it was watching the sport, and the sport has grown. I mean, the one thing that the people will tell you, I mean, indoor, to raise some money for people for food bags with what we're going through, indoor soccer just did an indoor forum over 2 days, and they had the former players on, and a player, Brian Quinn, who was an outstanding player for the San Diego Soccer, unbelievable player, played for our U.S. national outdoor team, because a lot of the indoor guys formed the outdoor national team at that point in time. He came back into coaching in around 2002 with our league, and he still coaches University of San Diego right now, so he's been a long-time coach, but he talked about how the game had evolved, because when you start off the game, people learn the game and they're learning the game. Now that it's 40-some years old, you know, learning, you know, how to play zone defense in the game, different way to take free kicks or defend free kicks.
A little bit more nuanced learning now than just here's the X's and O's.
And not nothing in the way, you know, I guess in outdoor you do substitution sometimes for injuries, and you do that indoor too, but you really don't do that to kill time. It's more about, I guess, strategy and timing those substitutions too, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, it's in and out. You might run for 30 seconds and you're out, or you might run for a little over a minute and you're out. And it's the timing of the substitution. You don't want to sub when your team doesn't have the ball. You want to be able to keep the ball and get on and off. And then can you time your substitution where you can get some fresh bodies on the field and they have some tired bodies on the field, and therefore you can take some people one-on-one at that point in time and what you're doing. So, you know, it's a timing of all those substitutions and the strategy surrounding those substitutions. And then, you know, if the ball goes out of play and there is a free kick in a dangerous area, you can get people one that are more dangerous on free kicks and the like. So there's a lot of strategy that goes along with it. And the one thing with coaching indoor soccer, you feel like you're impacting the game a little bit more like during the game than sometimes within outdoor soccer also. So, you know, it's a fun game. But the one thing people realize is, yeah, it's been around a long time. It kept professional soccer alive here in the United States. It's an exciting game to watch for sure. But also, I get a kick out of, or don't get a kick out of, a lot of so-called purists that want to, like, well, I don't want anything to do with that or indoor soccer and what we're doing. But when in fact, every team around the world plays small-sided soccer when they're training. Everybody plays small-sided soccer to work on things when they're training. And that's all indoor soccer is. It's small-sided soccer, and it happens to have the boards. It makes it a little bit more exciting. And yes, it does create some passing angles for you and things like that. But the bottom line is it's small-sided soccer. So, you know, how can you rebalance the field when people are making overlapping runs?
Yeah.
Target forward play is a huge thing in indoor soccer and something that you're always trying to teach, you know, outdoor forwards how to play with their back to the goal and things like that. So, you know, it's got a great place for us,
you know,
in our continent, I think even across the world at some point in time. And it's certainly an exciting and fun game to watch.
Kevin Healy, the president of the Harrisburg Heat of the Major Arena Soccer League, joins us today. Kevin, you spent most of your life serving the Baltimore area, but less than 2 years ago, you got the call to go to the state capital of Pennsylvania and move to the Harrisburg Heat. Can you tell us a bit about that and why you did it?
Yeah, why I did it. I talked a lot about my dad, you know, prior to this, and this time I was following my son. He had a very, very good professional career.
Pat,
outstanding.
Right?
Yeah, my son was Pat also. So I tease with people. My dad was Francis Patrick Healy, but most people called him Pat. And then my son's first name is Pat. So sometimes people misspeak and call me Pat. And I say, don't worry about it. I've been called Pat my whole life. First my dad and now my son.
Yeah.
But he had a very good career. He was a star player for the Baltimore Blast. It was, you know, he was a two-team. He came out in the midfielder with a leading score one time. They moved him back to defender. He became defender of the year in the league, two-time defender of the year in the league. He was five-time all-league player. In fact, was an all-league player his last year that he played for the Blast 2 years ago, but he got an opportunity. He was always very known as an intelligent player. My son wasn't unbelievably fast or unbelievably big or unbelievably strong or things like that, but what differentiated him, he was very intelligent in what he did. Mm-hmm. He was around the game of soccer his whole life, and he really took it seriously and what was happening. And his intelligence led in the game, led him to the opportunity of being potentially a coach, and a position opened up in Harrisburg. And, you know, after thinking about it long and hard, he decided to take that job. So after he got the job there, I started thinking, and along with our owner, Ed Hill in Baltimore, saying, well, maybe it's a good opportunity, kind of my last project in my life, to go up to Harrisburg, help them improve their attendance up there, because we have a lot of really significant franchises that are looking at coming into our league, you know, some professional hockey league franchises, American Hockey League and other Eastern Hockey League, people like that have looked at it. And if we could get more franchises to be successful off the field, you know, that would be helpful. So
right.
Pat's kind of, you know, he's the coaching general manager. He handles all the on-field stuff. And I worry about the business side of it, along with our owner, Carl. Carl Delmont.
So what do y'all talk about at Christmas dinner?
We talk about it, Christmas dinner, Sunday dinner, every dinner, and what we're doing and what's happening. But we, you know, I have a very close relationship with him, and along with my daughter, too, who was an excellent athlete also. And it's just been a part of our lives and what we do. And, you know, and not just that, we're Oriole fans. We're talking Oriole stuff all the time. We're talking Ravens, you know, and what we're doing.
That's a true Yinza right there, the Orioles.
Well, yeah. And that, it kind of worked out, right?
I'm a huge Oriole fan, and I had the major up in the you know, when I was young, and then we've had some really tough times, and then we got good again, and now we're in some tough times again also. But we are mini season ticket holders, and we have seats behind home plate, and we love it.
I heard you had just as many home runs as Chris Davis 2 years ago, but that's another story.
Oh my goodness, what happened there is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So are you behind the team colors of the Harrisburg Heat, because I know the Ravens are purple, the Orioles are orange, and the Harrisburg Heat are purple and orange. What's up with that, Kevin?
We do laugh about that, and then we had nothing to do with that, but we do laugh about that because we both have a lot of purple and orange in our repertoire, but it's more Orioles and Ravens than what's going on there. But it does fit in well. But you know, as far as soccer stuff now, they're filling up with some Harrisburg Heat stuff in all of our houses. My daughter, my son, and our house also.
All right, and do you have the website? We're happy to give that out to the team.
Yeah, www.harrisburgheat.com.
All right,
so perfect. We're really proud of what, you know, what my son's been able to accomplish there, and we had a good year, and you know, he took over a team that had 6 wins, and the first year they went 11-13, and then this year we were 13-8 when the season was stopped. We had 3 games left in the regular season at that point. So very proud of what he's been able to accomplish there, and also in Baltimore. You know, we won a lot of championships in Baltimore, and you know, the players win championships and make a good name for the general manager. And my son had a lot to do with that.
Well, to bring this thing full circle, then I got to ask you: the NBA is looking at doing a 24-team playoff. Okay, there are a lot of people who are arguing there's going to be teams now that do not belong in that scenario. Mm-hmm. If just hypothetical, the league would come back and say, hey, we're going to take that model and do a playoff picture. I know a lot of coaches who hate that because a round robin, you're playing one game, you have a bad day, and you know, you're kaput out of the season that you might have had a really winning record. You had an off week going into the playoffs, or you know, the various scenario there. So would you be up for like an expanded, quote unquote, expanded playoff scenario in the league?
It's not that, you know, there's been some talk. We still don't know for sure what we're going to do with it, but there's been some talk about, you know, a couple of weeks ago, quite frankly, it didn't look good. But, you know, things are opening up now a little bit more. We won't be able to do it with fans, but there's been talk about doing a playoff. And I had that exact conversation with some people that have been talking about, you know, with league management and whatnot. If, you know, really protecting the teams that were, you know, we had a Florida team that was 20-3 at one time,
right.
is you know, protecting them and what we're doing. And if you just had, you know, like NCAA basketball, one game and out, it would be kind of tough for them for sure, you know, because of one bad day, like you just said. So we're trying to put something in place that may be a little bit different than that. And also, you know, put somewhere. We're hoping to get this where maybe the final game would be on national TV, because certainly sports,
that'd be awesome.
You know, TV is looking for sports right now and what we're doing, but maybe a pay-per-view for the previous games, and you know, people will be more willing to buy the package that they think their team's going to have more than one game. So I think our league is more going along the lines of, you know, if they did a round robin, it would have to be something with wild cards.
Yeah.
So you could have a slip up and still be available. Or in our league, what our league has done in the past, it's done home and away with a mini game. So effectively, it's 2 out of 3.
Right, a best of 3.
But you just don't travel again. You play one site, play the other. If you split the games, then you play a mini game at that point. So, you know, they may go along that route, because then that would be the same format that we were going to have before, except you're not traveling. You're doing it all one site. So I do think the teams that were at the top of the table need to have the ability to have a little bit of a wiggle room in case they had a bad game, because quite frankly, you're not in midseason form right now.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. it. HarrisburgHeat.com is the website. I know also the league, the Major Arena Soccer League, has a YouTube channel where you can catch some of the previous games. And I got to say, the production value is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And it's fast action to follow, but whoever's behind that at the league has done a pretty good job. So for folks that are curious and you've missed indoor soccer, you don't have to necessarily go look at old matches. You can look at some current matches and get some quality out there as well. Kevin Healy, it's been a pleasure. Good luck. Hopefully getting the season started sooner rather than later. Congratulations on a long, historic career. Congratulations on having a legacy. Your son helping move your name forward, a third generation. That's incredible. We thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And please don't be a stranger. We'd love to check back in with you from time to time and see how things are going with your son and you with the Harrisburg Heat.
Happy to talk to you at any time. We'd love to bring those Memphis words back. You had mentioned John Husker early in our conversation, and I certainly followed the Memphis Rose when John went down there and shut out the Cosmos. And, maybe we can bring indoor soccer back, call it the Americans, call it the Rhodes, whatever we want to do. But let's get indoor soccer back in Memphis.
It'd be fun.
I heard you say John Husker and the Memphis Rogues. I don't know if there's enough waivers to get John Husker back on the field, Kevin.
He wants to, but man,
he is so hungry. To get back on the pitch.
I heard the podcast last week, and he said it to me several times too. But I guess that's what makes great players great. They always believe they can do it. They always believe they can do it at some point. But what a wonderful friend John is, and I was really happy, to hear the podcast that he did last week for you guys.
He's a good guy, and we really appreciate you spending some time with us. Proof that the guys from Loyola, quality folks. Kevin, thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
This podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters.
But we want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services and actually made the switch to Podcave.
Yeah, combining all the tools that we need to make the best shows we can to make them available on all the platforms you use and to always stay connected with you. Now, Podcave provides unlimited audio storage for all of our episodes, new and old. They're always available whenever you want them.
Our website, by the way, it's included, built in to Podcave. So you can, find us on one place.
It's really that easy. And by the way, I know that there's a hang up. Music and soundscapes that we use on the show, well, they're professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave, so you don't have to worry about finding them, nor do you have to worry about getting sued for using music without their permission.
That's such a big deal. We get an email, by the way, and text engagement tools to stay in touch with you. Guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines, which is a huge time saver.
We used to have to piecemeal all this stuff. It cost hundreds of dollars every month, and we had to have all these different accounts with different passwords and different windows. It was a mess.
To say the least, it was a mess. Podcave put all that together one spot, and it only costs $49 a month. Hosting and distribution, a killer website, episode planning, everything we need, $49 a month, Tim.
Save time and money with Podcave. Try it free for 1 month. Go to podcave.com/my3subs and get a month on us. That's podcave.com/my3subs.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we have added time to the podcast.
Hey, I'm excited because the month of June's about to roll around. That means Seamus and our friends at the Brass Door are going to be reopening better than ever before.
Yeah, I hope that's a sign and signal to everybody around that, hey, let's do this thing. Let's get outside. Let's enjoy it.
And I went by Gibson's Donuts to see our friend Don DeWeese.
Did you get in?
The NASL and the MISL former referee and now owns the world famous donut shop.
Yeah.
For social distancing, they've put stickers of different donuts on the floor marked 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hilarious. Of course, me being the contrarian, I bought an eclair.
Oh, of course. Of course you had
so
to.
So good.
Man, those are so good. Do you custard? You go custard or do you do the I don't know what the frosting filling is.
I did the custard.
The custard, you have to, right?
You got
to
go full blown on cheat day. Absolutely.
I mean, come on, man.
Hey, we won't cheat you on social media. Check us out at My Three Subs Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. My Three Subs Soccer Pod on Instagram, and then via email. Send your angry exultations, comments, and especially compliments to...
Yeah, go to My Three Subs... Sorry, you got me on that one. My Three Subs Soccer... No. Is it My Three Subs Podcast at gmail.com?
Right. Why did I forget that one?
No, it's okay. It's kind of like your, you know, it's kind of like your own street address. You never actually look at it.
Well, and then I started thinking about those damn eclairs over at Gibson's Donuts, and, you know, everything went out the window.
It is a pleasant distraction, no doubt about that. For Mixmaster, co-host, and Grand Poobah, Brody Scott, I'm Tim Van Horn with no huge titles, just a huge ego. And we'll see you next time on My Three Subs.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more My Three Subs podcast, A Soccer Odyssey,